Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Andor Season 2, Episodes 4 through 6. They're making it easier on me every week. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan. Hi, person to be named in a moment. Hi, listeners.
Who could it be?
Person to be named in a trade, named later. Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hi. My only question of the night is, what do we think Dr. Gorse got for takeout?
It looked like a cupcake.
Yeah, I thought it was a dessert.
It looked like a dessert thing.
So, in which case, I'd like to point out that the broad theme so far of these six episodes, like the one overarching story has been like, so
parties. With,
no, cakes and cupcakes.
Cakes.
More cakes. Anyone want more cakes? Yeah. The Empire loves cakes.
Dr. Gorse.
Cake or death.
Dr. Gorse.
Literally, cake or death.
I think cake is, literally cake and perhaps, not recognizing the role and value of cake has brought about the downfall of many an
Name
empire.
One.
Marie Antoinette.
France. That would be the first one would be
no,
France.
She understood cake. She just didn't understand that bread was not cake.
I would say, therefore, that she does not understand cake.
Or not bread.
Or bread.
What I'm saying is Dr. Gorse can have a little cake as a treat.
Yeah.
I still like my cake or death. But yeah, okay. I would agree it was a cupcake.
Mm-hmm.
So
great.
Cupcakes right. are still a thing. Like cupcake... So like the cupcake phase,
still a thing. It's a long time ago. We got cupcakes from them.
Cupcakes now are still a thing.
No. Let me finish. So cupcakes as a trend, right? Remember when there was all those cupcake stores like 15 years ago, and now they're gone.
Yep. Now they're dispensaries. Yes. They are.
It's true.
That's not an insightful thing. I'm just thinking about the exact locations in our neighborhood.
It's true. It's
and they
like,
are
man,
now dispensaries.
I'm tired of all these cupcake stores. I wish they were something else. I take it back.
Monkey's
I take it all
paw,
back.
Curls.
I would take all cupcake stores back.
The problem is then all the people going to the dispensaries get the munchies, so they need to open more cupcake stores.
Really, I remember, Kat, when you were really upset. This is not a sponsor, but there is an establishment near Dan's house that just proclaims in large neon letters, cookies. They do not sell cookies, and you must be 18 to go in to buy their controlled
substance. I am annoyed about that. There are several places I've seen around where we live in Somerville, and like, oh cool, a new like this great new like there's a place that every time I have like, oh that's a cool new like Middle Eastern like sandwich place, and I'm like, no it's not, like, because the logos and the font, it like looks like a falafel place, and it's not. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly so sad that these aren't sandwich places.
Well,
we're about 5 minutes in, and so far we've discussed cupcakes and dispensaries. All right. So,
why are we here?
We are
this
here.
This episode brought to you by
second.
No longer fascism, but now cupcakes.
Death sticks.
Well, that's a step up.
Yeah. Second, hey, there's a connecting line to things that happen in these episodes.
Second book/chapter of Andor
book?
Season 2.
I would not call these the book of Andor. That's
no
dangerous.
Therefore, cannot be a book.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't realize that was the defining factor. We have episode 4, Ever Been to Gorman? Episode 5, I Have Friends Everywhere. And episode 6, What a Festive Evening. Boy, I like the episode titles. It's too bad they jam them all together and we never really know. We're going to once again break this down by... Actually, we're going to do by planet this
by
week
planet,
rather than by character, just to keep everybody on their toes, I guess.
Do you want me to get the dice this time?
I don't know.
How long really is this going to take?
Too long.
Yeah,
is the answer.
I literally am holding dice right now.
Oh, okay, Tony, roll some dice.
I don't know what the results of them are, but here's a random number for you. 5.
Kat, you're up.
I rolled a D6.
I would say if it's a 4, we'll do more Dunkin' Donuts trivia. All right, I'm up.
Your choice of planet. Pick your planet. You get your choices are Gorman, we've never before seen in Star Wars, Coruscant, somewhere we've been a lot and many characters will visit, or Dakar, which sounds like a Klingon planet, but it's not.
We'll do the Austrian stand-in, which is Gorman.
Oh, there's a lot of debate about what
is
Gorman
Austrian?
Is a stand for.
Is it Italy?
I think it's Switzerland, because it's a little bit of all of them.
No, I think it's Austria. The cut of the clothes and the focus on the coffee houses and the Sacher port, like, it's essentially Austria.
Yeah, but the fashion
the
forward part is very Milan.
Yeah,
Northern
it's
Italy.
Very...
And the resistance.
Oh, see, I think not
the
Italy.
Resistance is clearly French.
The
architecture
I think,
is actually fairly Italian.
Yeah, they
I
said
would
that,
say,
by the way.
I think, can we agree, is it like... could we find somewhere like
Nebraska?
Southern coast of France? Yes.
Mediterranean.
Where do France and Italy come together? Lincoln, Nebraska. So I'm glad we could work this out. Yeah, I was going to suggest, somewhere on the Mediterranean.
No, it's
French,
definitely not Mediterranean
Italian
culture.
Border. Oh, okay, then I'm sorry.
1 year later. This podcast is not about the show.
I'll do Gorman.
Please.
Well, no, you guys had to pick your countries.
Oh, we pick
first.
Them now?
Plans. Yes. That way you can be like thinking through your jokes in advance.
You're giving us way more credit.
You think these are prepped? You think we have writers?
Hold on, let me go to my notes page of jokes.
Let me go down the hall and check with the room and see what they put together for me.
Well, we've got a tight five on Dakar. You better pick that.
Okay. Yeah. Can you just say it sounds Klingon a couple times for 5 minutes? So, Dan, we can do Dakar and then Coruscant together, because Dakar, there's only three scenes. And actually, one of them's not on Dakar. It's on wherever they go to steal.
Moon.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. We'll trade Coruscant right. and Dakar back
we'll,
and forth. We'll figure
Coruscant,
it out.
There's a lot. So.
There's a lot. And
all right,
Gorman,
so we're starting
so.
A lot, Gorman. Too. Well, you know what? Guess what? We're all friends. We're going to do this together.
No, you're just going to interrupt me and just mansplain the episode.
I said together. I didn't say, wow. I mean, you're not wrong, but it's unkind to point it out. So, you're losing your moral high ground is what I'm saying, Kat. And you know what happens to people who don't have the high ground?
they burn to a crisp.
They get left in a river of lava.
What?
Give it up, Anakin. No. I have the high ground. Come on.
But I was the chosen one. Gorman. All right. So I would like to say there's like basically like three different sort of story arcs here that we see.
A lot of time there. Yeah.
Yeah. The first off again is like we go to Spider Planet, which first thing is first, I'll just say like as discussing it, they did a really good make this planet. This planet is like we never seen it, never heard it other than like briefly Gorman Massacre. And it's by the end of this trip, like three. I felt like really good. This is
They built it.
It was incredible.
Like, it's amazing.
Incredible. And culture and all these things, way more than, again, any Vespa gang on Tatooine. So a bunch of things going on. So we had a year later, Cyril Karn is now there working still in not fuel purity, but standards. He's running his own little bureau. It opens up with him going to work. He now runs his own little station and talks to his mother once a week. And she thinks that he's broken up with Dedra, given up his swanky little flat. And is in a dead-end job. But what he's actually doing is trying to be recruited by the Gorman front there. And knows he's being and still working with his still girlfriend. Unclear. It's a weird relationship. We'll talk about that.
Let's not put labels on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a key to his house in Coruscant anymore. Did you notice that?
I thought he was allowed to stay for an hour, Tony.
He's one hour.
Yeah. No.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, so and we learn more and more that essentially there was a massacre there, 20, 30 years ago by Grand Moff Tarkin, who just landed his space shuttle on a crowd of people. They put up a monument, which is sort of a very important thing to the Gormans. But of course, the Imperials, we know they're building an armory on there and have built the armory such to really antagonize the Gorman. And we know this entire plot is basically get the Gorman to fight back enough that they can crush them so they can then basically strip mine the entire planet for the Death Star.
And it is interesting because this is not, I don't know if they ever say where Gorman is, but it's clearly not like an outer rim planet. Yeah. It's a planet with a lot going on. There's people there that have money. It may be like most Star Wars planet, a single economy planet where their entire economy is based around spider base.
Yeah.
And just so we're clear, if my involvement in overthrowing an evil space dictatorship involved me having to touch spiders on a weekly basis, I'm sorry. I can't take a spider with a coded message home. I can't. But it's this weird. I mean, in some ways, it's like I feel like it's more real than many other Star Wars planets. Even though it is, you know, this we literally just basically hang out at this town square that is like, you know, the fashion shop is there, the Imperial offices are there, and the armory is in the background, and people are having frequent protests in the middle of it. The hotel looks down on it, right? It's kind of like I imagine it's like the Times Square of downtown Gorman, right?
I'm thinking more like a central plaza, like in Prague or something.
Well, it's classy.
It's a classy Times Square.
Yeah. You know, before Julie cleaned it up.
I do want to say one of the coolest things, and there's a making of video, behind the scenes video on StarWars.com, where they talk about building the world and everything. Mm-hmm. And part of it is building that entire set and how everything's off that central plaza. Mm. And it allows them to move between these open spaces and these sort of smaller, more intimate spaces. So the showroom that we see, the cafe, the hotel, they're all off that central plaza.
The lighting
plaza.
Is very natural and it's good. And like, again, the stone, the shots of them crossing, walking across and being accosted. Like, it just... It's exactly how you would interact in that space, which makes it so good. Like, the walking to and from work the plaza, being accosted by the guy selling you that stupid spider, just sitting on the steps and chatting. It feels so real, which is amazing.
They built a giant set, and they use every piece of it, right? I mean, it's like, we're going to shoot this from every angle. We're going to have elaborate tracking shots as various characters walk across it. We're going to hang out in this shop forever. But it's you know, they managed to download into us a lot of Gorman culture pretty quickly. And it builds on the, you know, educational video we were shown in a meeting several episodes ago. But I also kind of appreciate that, like, this is not like a colony in the way that the Outer Rim planets are, right?
They're very proud of their, and I think that's what the Bureau of Enlightenment uses. It was cool, too, to hear Cyril Karn's mother in their weekly phone calls saying, like, she can't, not only can't she believe that he took this job, but also it's with the Gorman. She may have once worn it, like, but clearly she's bought into the propaganda as well.
Propaganda, yeah.
So real quick, there's a lot that we can talk more about, but real quick, so basically, he's recruited because he's trying to be recruited. At that point, he tests it out, and then we'll talk about the Coruscant, but it's basically Cassian is sent there in as a fashion designer, which was spectacular. Takes a look
like
at these guys and realizes, like, they move too slow, and now they're moving too fast, and decides he doesn't want to support them. He has a fight with Luthen, which we'll talk about more. And basically then Luthen always has another trick up his sleeve and sends in Cinta and Val, which is a beautiful, beautiful, very touching reunion. They decide to support, actually, the capturing the
transport.
The transport, thank you. Actually, also very cool to see those two and how much they've grown leading versus the first mission they ever did. But unfortunately, things go awry. Cinta is killed. Val is crushed. And we'll talk about that scene too, where she, like, Val gives one of the most crushing speeches ever I've seen on TV. We've kicked off the Gorman resistance. And that's pretty much it. And the only thing I'll really say before we sort of open it up is, like, again, Cyril Karn is in a different story because he doesn't even know what the real plan is, which again,
but he is so excited.
He's so good at playing spy.
Yeah.
I really loved this entire plot.
Yeah, it's really solid. I mean, I think they do a great job. It's very subtle. I kind of enjoyed the fact that they have essentially Cyril and Cassian switch places because then you don't.
I was like, are they going to bump into each other?
Exactly. No, yeah. That's exactly what they're trying to avoid.
That would be like, that would be something that would happen in like a 90-minute action movie, right?
Exactly.
Is that the two people would cross paths and coincidence would then send events spiraling. And that is not what this show is interested in.
And we were trying to remember if Cassian would even remember Cyril. Cyril would definitely remember Cassian.
The closest is, I always think of, like, basically one of the places they kind of got the closest together was before the funeral and things like that. They're on the planet and like there's like a doesn't Luthen is I think Luthen is there with Cassian and they like blow up a car and
that's
and,
the first arc in
Ferris. But doesn't Cyril see Luthen and Cassian like speeding away on a speeder bike and like the closest he gets is like 100 feet away.
He's been looking for Cassian. He has a murder board somewhere, but Cassian might walk right past him without really realizing who he is. I agree. I love the fashion designer look. It's a great showcase for Diego Luna. To show how far Cassian has come from a sort of blunt instrument soldier to a guy who is developing the spy skill set.
Like learning very quickly and then how manipulative he is with like the bellhop.
Yeah, exactly. He deploys a lot more skills than just like, hey, I'm a guy who can fly and fight, right?
Shoot people.
You know, we saw a little bit of that in the first arc where he gives that speech to the woman who works at the Thai facility. This is like even more, he's inhabiting a different character. It's a good bit of what we sort of see him really like becoming his own operative as opposed to just being used by other people.
And I feel like it makes what we saw in the previous three episodes kind of more clear, where, you know, he steals that TIE fighter and he kind of like just barely gets away and it's all bumbling and everything goes wrong. And then he gets basically held at gunpoint by a bunch of, you know, goons for 24 hours. And this is like, now he's like, he's on task.
Mission, yeah, smooth operator.
You know, the and there's all these great spy conversations where it's like, is what they're talking about what they're talking about? No, it is not. That is not. I think about the conversation where, and I apologize, I don't remember the names of any of the Gorman resistance people, but like the lady comes and meets him at the coffee shop when they did not have a scheduled meeting.
Yeah, yes. And right? he tears her apart and for he, that.
Yes.
Eviscerates.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas
you don't
like,
know who I am. You could have just betrayed everything. And it's so interesting to see that too versus violence, into like he is clearly just much more aggressive about that, because he did a similar thing too with
and
the,
I think
on the first planet with the, you know, the two foreign camps.
And this is where our lines between Gorman and Coruscant get blurred, but like he's got stuff to lose,
exactly.
right?
That's
he's lost Brasso
saying.
and Bix is not doing well. At this point, we're 2 years out, right? And Bix is still having walking dreams about Dr. Gorsk, right? Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what I was going to say, Tony, is that he feels he has stuff he needs to protect. Mm. And and we see that also a little later in a scene we'll talk about where he confronts Luthen about talking to Bix, right? He feels very protective and he is worried about her. And in the same way, he is worried about everybody. And I think it's an interesting dynamic for him to report back to Luthen about the Gorman front, because Luthen is like, why are you being so cagey about this? Like, this is good. This is we can use this. And he's like, no, these guys are going to get themselves killed. And the Emperor's going to come down on them.
And he's like, and Luthen's
that's
like,
the point.
Luthen's like, that's what the money's for.
Yeah, that's what the money's for. That's right.
Do we need to talk about Luthen's management style?
Well, he fundamentally, and I think it shows again and again, and even the end, is like, he just doesn't seem to understand people beyond, like,
well,
I think he's come so far to think of people, like, even he says Valentin to say, we realize Luthen thinks we're more valuable apart than together, which is why Luthen didn't reveal to Val that Cinta had been hurt. And at the very end, like, we're getting Coruscant, but like, I think it's a very Luthen thing to like throw, I presume it was a mission given to them,
I think so.
It was a sop to Bix to kill Gorst, is like, this is how everything gets better, right?
Well, but I was unclear if they were on mission. I thought that was like, you know,
I think they are on mission because
the light was flashing just before
has
that.
A comment about
and they know it because Lonnie knows
Got
they
it.
Were the one who set up the naval room.
And isn't it Luthen?
It.
Doesn't
okay.
Luthen have
I
a comment about?
I thought that was
about
them doing extracurriculars.
Yeah, no.
Doesn't Luthen have a comment about, like, I'm trying to remember because he's blurred together, like, empathy, like, that's why we're doing this. Like, if we don't have empathy.
I do think that there is a trajectory, especially when you look at Luthen, because we get a decent amount of time with Luthen, and we see Luthen in conversation with a lot of different characters in these three episodes, right?
Yeah.
I think Luthen is in a different place than he was 2 years ago.
Yes.
Even giving his, like, Hellfire speech, at the, you know, in the elevator with Lonnie. I think he's like, he's losing it. Right?
I would agree.
Like, I think basically we're seeing a lot of these characters have been looking over their shoulders for 2 years and they are not coping with it well, right?
Yeah. And
I mean, Lonnie is like, Luthen, I mean, Luthen's fighting with, I'm blanking her name.
He fights with her several times. Yeah.
And it was like, they used to be like, you know, just like a unified front. And now he's like, I'm losing track of everything. I don't know what's going on. And I feel like he's losing the thread a little bit.
Yeah, I think
because he's just doing too much. And
he's
he probably
burned
hasn't
out. He's
slept
burned out.
In
like,
4 days in 4 years.
Yeah, that's just it. I think he, even though as much time as we spend with him, he's always playing a part, right? And that's some wonderful work by Stellan Skarsgård, where he's, you know, even when he is at the parties and doing this and doing that, he's always
when, like, Diego shows up and says, "You brought this to me." He's like,
he has a lot of plates in the air, and he is. You're right. He's losing them because if you don't sleep for 4 years, well, you're going to drop a plate or two.
Yeah.
And I think he is. I mean, I love that they call him, that his code name is Axis, because everything revolves around him. But also when those things, when your axis gets tilted and things, that's when bad stuff starts happening, because things start spinning out of control.
Yeah.
So I kind of enjoy that, watching him. And he still has some stuff together. I love the bit with him at the end, him and Clea. I guess we should talk about Coruscant because
I just want to say, going back to the Gorman real quick, if just there's one other thing I wanted to talk about. Yeah, I did love that scene of We Should Kill Krennic. But the Gormans, one thing I really liked about this is also just showing the different this is a new resistance for us. And I think it actually was very evocative to me, actually, of some of the American Revolution, right? Of the idea of the Rylands, who's the one leading. And he says it several times, you know, I don't think even emperor knows what's going on here, right? Mm-hmm. And very much they have this headcanon of the emperor is still good, the empire is good.
Sorry, the emperor is actually a cartoon villain, but Tony Gilroy is really trying to work around
ISB, right? The ISB is them who've like totally lost control.
The deep
and that's
state. The deep state.
Sorry.
we're not talking about J.D. Vance, as we talked about. We're not talking about J.D. Vance.
You need to put another dollar in the jar.
So. There's $4,000 in there so far.
But reference acknowledged. I did not get that reference.
That's fine. Okay. Don't worry about it.
But the fact that, so it's just, I think there's the stories of the American Revolution where people are just like, oh, we just want to like, we're going to be still become favorites of the king, right? And it's very much of a very different than why everyone else. So it's a new flavor of the resistance.
I just like that they have like a big town hall meeting where it looks like there's like 100 people there, and it's open to the public, and they're just talking about stuff, because this is a version of it that's like, it seems like it's just normal spider farmers there to talk about their webs and their weaveries and whatnot. But it's like, these are normal people. This is not like,
it's very Massachusetts, you know, like going to a select meeting, right? That's exactly what it is in your local town.
It's an
town.
Open meeting. Yeah, it is not like, it's not just like the smugglers and the spies in the shadows. Yeah. It's like, here's everybody. And apparently, again, this is a city that hasn't been, you know, squeezed the way the other rim places have, where apparently they're okay. They're less worried about saying things are bad.
They have something that the empire needs.
Yeah.
And as a result, they are kind of in that position of like, they don't get treated like every place else in some ways. Like, they're not, I think there's an element there of like, when we think about the empire and we think about its evolution over from the Republic, like, they don't necessarily have the ability to be like, look, we need to put a garrison on every single planet. We need every single planet locked down. Like, they have to kind of pick and choose because they don't really have the infrastructure. And they're like, I don't know, what a bunch of spider farmers going to do, right? Like, and it's not until they have something that the Empire was like, oh, we need this resource, that they actually even really seem to care about them. I mean, that whole thing with Tarkin landing the shuttle on them, like, oh, yeah, they were pissed, but like, it's not like they left the Empire.
They definitely sound like they are a economic juggernaut and sort of had some special privileges going forth. And yeah, but the I did, again, I think the final point I'll have is that town meetings, though, was still very good for, again, just like how much, I think they did an incredible amount of world building, even those town meetings, of like the way people were acting and the dressing and like
gestures,
the different characters, the gestures and like how they responded. Like, it felt so real.
Even, and it's a large chunk of it is in this
Gorm,
you know, constructed space language that people are acting while giving speeches in.
That was,
you know,
really,
which is
impressive.
I appreciate that, especially because, like, you know, we have spent a lot of time. I mean, it does seem like a lot of planets in Star Wars are majority human. And, you know, Tony Gilroy seems less interested in having lots of alien characters in his Star Wars. But yeah, they're in the background. But it was nice to go, like, not everyone speaks galactic basic common, whatever. Yeah.
Sorry, again, the behind the scenes video has some good background of this. It's a whole constructed language. Everybody they cast are French speakers.
That makes sense, given their accents.
They use all the French, basically, it's all French like phonemes that they've put together into this constructed language, which is why if you kind of listen to it,
it
kind of sounds French, but it's not.
I had trouble with it as someone who's taken high school French, where it's like, my brain is trying to parse this, but it
doesn't
work.
Make sense.
Because it sounds like French, but it ain't French.
Listening to an interview with the guy who plays Rylands, who's like, we would just speak it to each other sometimes when we were just hanging around the set. Because there's a whole vocabulary and everything. But it's incredibly, great work. I mean, they're memorizing these lines and doing all this, and it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
And I think they do a really nice job.
I mean, you both watched Star Trek Discovery. Do you remember way back in season one where they had lengthy scenes in subtitle Klingons that are like going to the dentist? They feel so long and boring. And
I've forgotten that on purpose.
Your brain is protecting you.
Yeah.
Because those were bad, and this works. And I don't know if I totally parse. I mean, maybe it helps that it's, you know, the constructed language plus heavy prosthetics may be a really bad combination.
No, I recently watched Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, and it's the Elvish is good. It's a good language. Thank you, J.R.R. Tolkien. But it's still really hard to act with it. And they're being elves, so they're a little wooden-y. Anyways,
Whoa. Bad news about our next sponsor.
Wood elves.
Elves?
Wood
elves. As a concept. Keebler writes the text, but I don't ask any questions.
So the passion, I think, in the acting is quite good. And the fact that they're all French speakers, that makes tons of sense. Anything else we want to talk about? Gorman?
Heist? Yeah, the heist at the end, I think, is really well done. It's very tense. I enjoy that Vel and Cinta are very competent at what they're doing. That awesome move that Cinta does where she like flips down and like puts the thing out. That's pretty great. We should talk about Vel and Cinta for a second, but what are you gonna say, Tony?
I was a little. Is there a driver of that?
There was a driver. There was a driver. You can see him in the cab. Getting, yeah.
When they get like zapped.
Okay. He gets zapped.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So Cinta getting shot. This has been a contentious one.
Yeah, a lot of feelings.
I read a few interviews on it, including with the actress whose name is.
Do people essentially argue that it's the first openly.
It's Barry Keoghan.
It's
the trope. Yeah. And I think, you know, there is a point to that. I will say. The counterpoint is the idea that like it wasn't done purely for shock value. It has a resonance with the story. I mean, we saw Brasso die in the last group too. Like the point is the rebellion, everyone's going to be touched by
a lot of blood loss.
A lot of people are going to die. And so I don't think it's not like we're singling them out.
And it was very much, I think that's right. And I think even if it had been
I think it's fair to say it is that trope.
It is.
But the context
totally
matters.
Agree. Yeah, right? Totally agree.
But that at the same time, I read a really good article. I'll put a link to this in the show notes on Gizmodo, where it talked about the fact that if you're going to have these like real relationships, they need to be able to have these characters be in peril. They're like from a dramatic standpoint, you can't be like, well, we need to protect them because of this. Like they need to be at risk in the same way that anybody else would be.
And it's just unfortunate that it is only in this.
It's
the trope, right? Like it's not their fault. They didn't invent the trope.
Well, it's what you and I argue all the time about is like for writing is like, that's perfectly fine that like you made that decision, but you have to be aware of how your decision is going to be read in the greater context.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
And so like you can do that, but you shouldn't be surprised that you're criticized for that.
Yes. Yeah. That said, I do think that it is interesting and is weighty and it has an emotional impact that is beyond just the like shock value because
they were the long lost lovers. I think that the retin, like, I think the story of like Cinta, the fact that it was like Cinta has incredible growth there, realizing like she wasted 2 years not being with Val.
Yeah. And I think it's to me, it's what works about it is the level of sort of brutal realism, right? Like, yes, you wasted your time. And yes, you sometimes don't get to say goodbye to people. And people are taken tragically and stupidly all of the time.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's not something, that it's something where it's like, we told them not to bring any guns. And of course, they brought a gun anyways.
Yep.
Chekhov's lack of guns.
Yeah. But like, and that it's just random, right? Like, in some ways, is awful. But it's also kind of par for the course for this story in the same way that like, Cassian doing everything right and then getting kidnapped by the stupid space people is also,
or,
you know, like
being between missions and getting arrested for lawyering.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Right? Ultimately, this is a show about people suffering for the rebellion, which is not a thing that Star Wars 1977 is interested in. It's like, Luke Skywalker, right place, right time. You blow up the Death Star, you get a parade. Never mind the thousands of people that died to get you there. Who flew that ship before yours? Don't ask any questions.
Why is there a blood stain in the cockpit?
I mean, we know that some of these characters die in Rogue One. Spoilers for Rogue One. Man, that would be weird if you're watching Andor and haven't seen Rogue One yet.
You are in for a treat.
Cassian's going to have a long and fruitful life.
The end game for... I just kind of assume, like, almost all these people are not only going to die, they are going to die horribly and in many cases, pointlessly.
Well, that's right? I think Val's death being friendly fire in some ways makes it I'm to the point of like, this is gonna sound horrible, but from the artistic choice to have her die via friendly fire rather than the opposite of friendly fire.
Unfriendly fire.
Some might call it unfriendly fire.
We would just call it fire traditionally, yes.
But it just makes it so much worse and I think so much more poignant. Yeah. And then I do want to give them credit for Val, giving Val that that space to grieve in that way was incredibly powerful. And again, I mentioned at the top of like the when she is on the trip, whatever, leaving with the guy who actually did the shot and he is breaking down and crying. And what she says is so cutting and awful. And I don't know if we're ever going to see that character again, the guy who shot her. But I'm like,
That line, the line that sticks with me is, this is on you like skin. Yeah. Yes. That line forever will live in my head rent-free for probably the rest of my life. Like, it is that good of a line to, you know, congrats to whoever wrote that one. Because, Faye Marseille's performance there as Val is really amazing. And I read the interview with Virata Sethu, who plays Cinta, and she's like, I was under a blanket having to pretend to be dead while she gave that speech, and I was really breaking up about it. I think we are also going to see how tragedy affects all of these people and how they deal with it in, as Tony said, like suffering for a cause. Like, this was Cinta's whole point in season one, is like the cause comes first, and in some ways her death, Vel has to take up that mantle kind of and be like, I am heartbroken, but also, you know, the cause, I have to keep going. I have to keep going because that's what this is all for. Like, if not, then she really died for nothing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It has been hard to avoid spoilers for Andor, especially because three episodes of it drop on Tuesdays. And I don't know if some people must have screeners for it. It seems like there is spoilers like much faster than 3 hours before after 9 o'clock on Tuesday. But there was definitely a news article that I saw that I did not click on, but it was like fans shocked by surprising death. And I was like, well, thanks. But I will say that was not my guess as to, I really thought, I thought Lonnie, I mean, like, you know,
Lonnie.
Lonnie's going to live all of us.
Lonnie gets a plum posting on the Death Star.
I didn't see that because it was the pointlessness of it. It was not someone who sacrificed themselves.
I think back to the heist arc in season one, where we meet all the other characters and we're like, oh, surely we will learn about the backstories of all these. Nope. They just get shot and they're
that
gone.
Was so
like,
shocking.
And that is what set the tone for this series. Is like, sometimes you meet a guy for 5 minutes, they help you with a heist, and they die, and you never, that's it. Yeah. Bye.
Poor Namek.
Yeah. Everyone's fighting their own rebellion. Some of those rebellions are shorter than others.
Coruscant. So, a lot going on in Coruscant this week.
It's something week. It's fashion week.
It's investiture week.
Senate investiture.
All right, just checking. Is that a real word?
Investiture? Yes.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're being invested with, yes.
Oh, is it a real word?
We'll talk about it more now with the new papal election, I'm sure. Like,
that's
true. He'll go through investiture, right?
I was not familiar. I looked at that and I was like, that's convincing as a real word, but I don't think I've ever seen that before.
That's a really good Star Warsy word.
What's your stupid
word?
The action
of formally investing a person with honors or rank. What's my stupid word? You're going to have to narrow it
the
down.
The one you use for like traveling through space. No.
Oh, that astrogation? That's not mine. That's a Star Wars word.
It's a stupid word.
I did not make it up.
But I'm glad you know the two words that I criticized you for.
I live with you.
Yeah.
It's investiture week. We've got Mon Mothma trying to do some wheeling and dealing. She's trying to get the law repealed that was the thing that basically sent Cassian away. The P.O.R.D.
That's the basically re-upping everyone's sentences.
Yeah. And she's not making a lot of ground. The Gorman senator is real cagey because he's having the Empire's looking at us. And
I'll keep going. I like this episode.
So we have to
deal with parties.
A lot of parties.
Perrin.
Perrin is in his element because he loves parties.
He loves that. That's a man who loves calendaring. Can I tell you?
I do enjoy
him,
that.
To hear him talk. It was nice to see him again.
There is a good scene between the two of them in the car. Where this is sort of the Cold War moment of like, okay, now we're in our element of like,
I thought they were in a different place than where we saw them a year ago. Like, I thought they were like chill in a way that they were not chill at the wedding.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I mean, wedding stress, daughter.
Well, also the guy. Around. Yeah, he, no mention, but clearly
nope.
dead.
Nope.
Yeah, no mention. I thought there would be like a,
so it could be.
You know, yeah. Yeah, so I guess, you know, parent doesn't have to worry about him.
Yeah.
So. Great costumes, by the way. Once again, her silver number, yeah. They're like his, when they walked to, what's his name? The
Skulgins.
They're super 70s. His broad shoulders, her like silver Mary Magdalene number. It's phenomenal.
I do like that, you know, this thing where we basically, I mean, the format of this season, I was a little skeptical at first, but it's knocking it out of the park. The thing where we basically spend like 3 days with our characters, like yeah.
every year.
And apparently Mon Mothma just goes to parties, but they're very stressful parties.
She has to go to the Senate at one point to take an oath, and
before
she storms
the party.
Out.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just saying they're very stressful parties. Yeah, I like there's the guy giving the oath, who I assume
the
is basically
keeper.
the new version of, I'm blanking on his name, the guy that stood behind Palpatine all the time and that basically
the
had
the Grand
no
Vizier, who is still around because they make a comment about him.
I thought he got killed. He didn't get killed by a Jedi?
He's okay.
In that part where they're like throwing things at each other.
Left.
In the...
He left for the
okay.
day.
Good for
her,
him.
What's her sidekick, the guy who from Naboo, what's his name?
We met him last week. I keep wanting to say Edwin. That's not his name.
Let's go with Edwin for the moment. I love when Edwin is
and he's in Rebels, right?
She's clearly showing off, and he's running around
Senate aid to Resistance aid.
He's like smiling, like, yeah, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everyone around him was kind of like trying to cover up for Mon Mothma. Mm-hmm. He does a very good job.
Yeah, so she's working on that. Meanwhile, we have Cassian and Bix. There's a fascinating little bit there where we learn a little bit, like they did a job at one point and
they had to kill a guy.
They killed a soldier who saw Bix's face.
Is it fair to connect the dots that was who Bix is seeing?
Yes.
Gorsk.
Yes.
Like, you know,
at the beginning of the episode,
she torched you.
Yes.
Yeah. Because there's a guy, we don't know who the guy is.
I think she's basically seeing herself and realizing in her dreams that, like, is she really as far, like, is she becoming like Gorsk?
Yeah, there's a lot going on with Bix, and I saw some people with some comments about her storyline, and I think for sure in those first couple episodes I started to get worried that, like, where are we going with this?
Yeah,
is it just going to be an exploration of her trauma in the delving into drug use and all of that?
I was really worried with, I was like accepting, like, that's what we're going to see. It's fine. I don't love it. And then she blew up Gorsk and was like, I am here for you, Bix.
Date night.
But it is, I think that redeemed that entire arc because first of all, I do think there's a validity to
showing, she shoots a cop. So
it's an Imperial officer.
Okay. Sorry. Space cop.
Thank you.
A S C A B.
But I do think
sorry.
I do think that there's a validity to showing the trauma of all of this. Like, you can't get away with not talking about it in any form, because what she has been through is traumatic. And the whole, like we talked about suffering, right? Like, this is the theme of all of this. She has been through more than any single person should have to be through. And there is no arguing that it would take a toll on her. And I kind of, you know, I just didn't want that to be the end. I didn't want to be the slow slow spiral down.
You got to show trauma, but you can't make her entire character trauma.
But I think they do a nice bit of having these moments where things come back into her life and show that, like, it's kind of like people trying to throw a rope, right? Cassian comes back after the mission, and she's so happy to see him, and, like, that adds a little bit of normality. Luthen showing up and being like, you know, I was going to offer you a job, but, like, you seem like you're having a hard time. I think he is, and the fact that I'm reading between the lines here that he is the one giving them the mission to deal with Gorsk, like, I think this is his attempt to throw a rope to her.
Oh,
be
yeah.
like,
I
you
totally
need to be doing
it's...
something. You need to feel like you're
you need
taking
revenge.
Action. Revenge, yeah. And it seems like...
Cathartic.
It seems like it worked. And you know what? Nobody feels bad. First of all, that guy's performance, Dr. Gorsk, great. I love the fact he does not remember who she's like. Oh,
no,
you look familiar.
He torches a lot of people. Yeah. Torches a lot of people.
And he doesn't.
And I like that he basically gets killed twice. It's like, we're going to plug you into your own torture thing, and then we're going to blow up the office.
Yeah. Well, it's harder to forensically like look at like, oh, somebody strapped this guy down. He has that not quite banality of evil, but
100%.
But it's not banal because he is clearly evil because he talks about all the things like the pain and the suffering the thing causes, right? It only
looks
forever.
But
it has that like element of the scientist again, you know, obviously space parallels with Nazism, very clear, true, but like the, you know, Nazi side, oh, well, we're just coming up with the most efficient way to cause
it's
the torture
efficient
thing.
Yeah. And which is why they expand the program.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. That's where our tie-in with ISB, where Lonnie's pal gets put in charge.
Calibrate your excitement or your enthusiasm.
Calibrate honor. Yeah.
So it's weird because this show is such, especially these three episodes, has these punctuating moments of humor that break up like the stress that you feel while watching it. I think of that line and the like we should have killed Krennic line, it's just like being let out of a balloon.
That is the key deployment of humor.
Anton Lesser again, just phenomenal.
Anton Lesser is really great. He is fun and party as like I enjoy that character immensely. Glad he's still around. Yeah, so our other main plot is Luthen and Clea. Clea overhears that basically one of the pieces in Skulden's collection has turned out to be a forgery, and therefore
not from Luthen. Not their
Luthen's
fault.
Too good for that.
Yeah, he deals in actual stuff. That's his cover. Yeah. Good. But they have put a bug in the thing they sold him, so they need to get it out, which leads us to a very tense party scene where...
I thought that was more tense than the heist.
I agree.
The heist was tense, but being like... Literally, them playing with the little sand sculpture and like just trying to turn a key was so tense.
And they ratchet it up where it's like it's not working, and
blood trickle is so. That is just.
And Lonnie does not want
to
be there.
Lonnie,
he is basically like
left.
He is basically like a hostage in this room, and they basically put like the worst people in the room are just like 10 feet away, right? Like, did you need to have Krennic there?
Yes,
no,
you did.
But it's crank it up so to 100, sure.
And Krennic and Mothmar are having this entire like philosophical political debate, and everyone's paying attention. And
I have to say, like, even I remember that scene, but if you ask me what
they're
talking about, I don't know because I'm focused on him.
It's almost
trying to take it out.
It's almost kind of facile where they're basically arguing. I mean, he does the like, rebellion or terrorist. Thing, and it's like, okay, Krennic, we get it. You do not have a degree in political science.
But it's not the point, right? The whole scene that is window dressing to what is really going on in that scene, and it's amazing how much tension.
Oh, there's one shot where Kayla is struggling, and it like the camera shows us like everybody is like looking at the other piece of art except Luthen, who's staring at them.
Looking at them.
Oh,
yeah,
it's such a great shot,
and I love that even that bit right at the end where. He's like, you know, Krennic comes over, is like, oh, I hear this is one of your favorite pieces, and Lonnie has to like jump in with like, oh, let me explain things because I was paying attention and I got my job for like, I'm a mole, but I have my job for a reason, like I'm good at figuring this out, and like what a great bit where it's like,
Lonnie,
throw it to you.
Did Lonnie get assigned to attend that party? I was like, poor Lonnie, he should have just stayed home.
No, they had to clear the ops room. And
for the Gorman.
For the Gorman. And so I do wonder, they might have pulled some strings to get him there. I'm not sure.
There
it's
was
unclear.
The thing where the other slightly higher ranking Imperial person is like, what the heck are you, who let you here? And he's like, I'm here all the time. I'm not here all the time.
The dweeby one who gets it's an honor. And whatever he's like, these something sunrises, they're delicious. I've already had one. And just like, of course they're over at the bar getting drunk. It's great.
Yes.
Yeah. Solid work.
But yeah, Clea, I was talking to you guys right beforehand, but I was reading the actress who plays Clea, Andor was her first show. I think, Tony, you were saying she's done more. Straight from Rada. She is...
Rada.
She is amazing. She is absolutely... so good, and just has become one of my favorite characters in this.
I'm glad we got to spend so much time with her. I mean, I feel like she kind of went from a background character in season one to like she's a full real character.
That's kind of what they said. It was Tony Gilroy was like, she was so good in season one that we like kind of needed to she ratcheted her up.
And it's really good in some ways. Like, she's currently, in my mind, the only thing that's really balancing Luthen. She calls out Luthen on his BS. She keeps on the straight and narrow, and she reminds him of what they're doing and why. Yeah. And refused to be blamed for what happened. Like, the bug, like, you agreed to it, Luthen, so don't put this on me. This was a joint decision.
That was a really interesting conversation to see playing out. And, you know, I mean, part of it is, like, Luthen's lost it, and he's lashing out at everybody, right? Yeah. He's yelling at Lonnie when he shouldn't. He even has, there's the weird conversation where he's, like he's basically briefing Cassian, and they do the thing where like half of the conversation is kind of like happening while Cassian is like walking away from Luthen, and Luthen is like shouting at him. And I was like, I don't think this is how you should do a secret briefing, but I basically believe that like you all are like falling apart here.
That's a tricky scene too. That's the Cassian comes to him at the shop, which at one point, because he's angry about Luthen having gone to see Bix. And for Cassian, who has been lecturing everybody about OPSEC, basically, like, you know it's serious
and,
when he's
and
like,
then you blew
I'm just
OPSEC.
Walking in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Like, and I enjoy that scene because Luthen's immediately like,
here's why you're here.
Yeah, I brought you a medallion. This is going to be the reason that you were here. Get the hell out.
I believe that Luthen was like 10 seconds away from shooting Cassian if he had to be at that point, right? Something.
Yeah.
I just think Cassian was, I don't think Cassian understood how thin the ice was.
I really enjoy their relationship, right? Because Luthen is still the one who is kind of nominally in charge, but I think he knows he needs Cassian. He makes that comment, like, you got to think like a leader, right? Like, he is trying to, he's realizing like, look, I can't, I think Luthen is aware that he's losing stuff, as we said, and he's not remembering stuff. So he knows, I need to train the next set of people who are going to be able to step in my shoes because I cannot do this forever.
I mean, and some of it is economy of characters, but I also wonder, like, how big is Luthen's actual network of operatives, right? Because we see basically Valcinta and Cassian seem to be his like A-list.
They have a comment at some point about other people, like, because Clea has been like relaying messages, and he obviously he also knows Saw, he knows Mon Mothma, he
knows
is the one who
Mayan,
connects all
Maya
the,
Pei. Yeah. Also, I think the question I always keep asking is like, who is running the rebels? Like, who's running Hera?
They were their own thing.
They get brought in. They're a cell,
And they basically. I get a little, I think I keep trying to line up Rebel events with Andor because they're both so intermingled, and it gets a little tricky because at first they're not anything, right? They're just on Lothal and they're basically, I don't know, thieves and smugglers, right? Who sticking it to the Empire because they know the Empire, they're not going to rob innocent people. They know the Empire is bad. And then they're getting messages from Fulcrum and they eventually end up with Phoenix Squadron, which has, Hera and Mon Mothma and other people involved.
Well, and Hera,
but I feel
is
like that's
got to
be closely
connected. Yeah. She's the one who's trying to bring them in.
And you get the idea that her dad is leading the resistance on Ryloth, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
So they say it's actually that Rebels takes place also 5 years in the battle of before.
They are basically at the same time. And Fulcrum is...
And there is always that interest... Like, it's fun that there's Axis and Fulcrum are your, your two code names.
Intentional,
I assume. At this point, I also... we haven't talked about the fact that we do see...
Bail Organa.
So, Bail Organa. And Organa
for
is...
10 seconds.
...working with Ahsoka? Or Organa's... Like, what's Organa's relationship?
So he is... He is Fulcrum at one point, right?
Is he? Okay.
Because I want to say... And I guess the question I kind of want to know at this point is, like, do Mon Mothma and Organa know that they are both working on the Rebellion at this point?
Or are they just sympathetic?
Yeah, are they both leading different cells, essentially?
Yeah, according to some of the Wikipedia stuff, Ahsoka takes over Bail Organa's intelligence network and becomes Fulcrum. But we know that Bail Organa plays a part in that as well. We see him here... you know, we knew he'll be on Yavin in Rogue One. He's still kind of nominally legit by the end of A New Hope, by his death, right? Like, he is still nominally, he's in the Senate. He's still doing, like, you know, he's kind of above board still at that point.
Is Organa
Mon Mothma's left by that point.
Yeah. So I wonder then if Organa would go, and I'm sure they have this entire thing written out, but if, like, Organa... Organa, we know, always has to stay more hidden away because he has Leia and knows that he can't draw too much attention and has a relationship with Ahsoka and acts with Ahsoka, but I think might be an Ahsoka eventually. So yeah, I assume he knows, but he has to keep himself a lower profile because of Leia.
Yeah. My understanding, and this is, I don't think, a spoiler, we get a glimpse at him this week because he is going to play a larger part,
I assume,
subsequently.
Especially also that is, I mean, not a big name actor. I recognize him from lots of crime shows and Law and Order and things like that. But yeah, I don't think you don't bother bringing him in to be there for, you know,
it's not for a cameo, for lip service. No. And so my understanding is also they basically, Jimmy Smits was just unavailable. Like, they couldn't get him. Uh-huh. And they're like, this is the problem with legacy characters.
It's,
like,
it's
you
funny
can't get people, you can't get people. Like,
both of them have been on Law and Order.
Yes. Yeah, so. And like, my thought was, if you're going to replace Jimmy Smits, Benjamin Bratt is a great choice.
Yeah.
Like, he's got that equal level of gravitas and, he's really good.
I feel like they've played the same characters before, but I might be making that up. I also appreciate they didn't do CGI.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, you want to get, and people are saying, like, look, we can handle it. You know, a lot of these characters get recast at various points. I had thought it strange that when he first shows up, just because we just saw Jimmy Smits reprise Bail Organa in the Obi-Wan show.
Yeah.
Not that
which
long
may have
ago.
Been filmed a million years ago.
Yeah.
Right?
But at the same time, we're like, well, maybe he thought he was getting outgrowing it, or maybe he just felt like, nah, I don't want to do it anymore. But I think in the end, it just looked like, you know, timing stuff. You gotta, can't get everybody you want the times that you need to want them. So sometimes you just got to go with the efficient answer, which is recast it. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Dadra.
Dakar. Oh, we
Dakar.
Dadra.
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 Well, Dadra doesn't do a lot actively this week. She has her meetings with Partagaz and Cyril. She's the go-between kind of because she's organizing this. The stuff with her and Cyril is pretty great, though.
It's just so weird. It's so weird. I love it so much. Here's the question. Like, Dadra is basically trying to get to basically run a real false flag operation, whatever you want to call that, but essentially to be able to crush Gorman. Mm. What does Cyril think he's doing?
He thinks he's the cowboy that's gonna capture some rebels and save the day.
Yeah, he thinks that they are going to. I think he thinks they're gonna catch them. But
he thinks they're catching bad guys for the sake of catching bad guys. Cyril Dadra thinks that they are basically inciting bad guys so that they can.
I don't think Cyril.
She doesn't know that it's a frame up. Basically,
yes. I don't think Cyril
gets
that.
But he thinks he's basically going to get enough to get.
Yeah, and he knows
to capture them.
And he clearly, I mean, they have their Partagaz and her have the brief thing about like he can't know what's actually going on, which I assume is both the bigger picture of crushing them. And also, he can't know anything about there's some mineral that we need, maybe we're going to cause earthquakes. Sorry, Gorman quakes, Gorquakes, and or blow up their planet, which
Andor's
sounds like
not going to blow up their planet.
Oh no! Why would I say that? There is a little bit of poetic justice to like in order to create a horrible Death Star that blows up planets. We got to blow up a planet.
Why don't we just do that?
Well, it's clearly, Dan, this whole show is about how hard it is to blow up one planet with, you know, there's, you have to have all these meetings.
Yeah. I will also, two things. One, it was nice reading the Tony Gilroy, some interviews and just like how much they did lean on, I think all the World War II notes from Hitler's meetings of like that really, it wasn't just us making that up. That really did inform what they're doing with ISB, but also, the briefing, two different briefings. The briefing between Partagaz and Dadra, when it's just the two of them, versus the briefing that happens when Cyril Karn's there. And basically, Cyril does all the briefing. He kind of interrupts Dadra at one point. He takes credit and gets very excited and then says, "This is the greatest day of my life." And just so well done.
You poor monkey.
poor kid. I do think it is interesting to link back to the Cassian bit. Like, Cassian is both right and he's right about the Gorman front for like the wrong reasons. Like he's like, we shouldn't get involved, and it's like, yeah, because it's a false flag operation, but he doesn't know that.
Yeah,
he's also right that they're kind of not, don't really have their crap together, but that which is what gets Cinta killed.
Yeah.
But for Dadra, we get like a little bit of her. She's navigating. I like that, you know, part of guest says you're walking a narrow path, right? Like, because at a certain point, this is a fascinating question for me, because I think I threw this open in our coverage of season one, is I kind of feel like Cyril is right on that edge of like he is so committed to his ideal version of what the Empire is that there is the risk that you turn him when his idealism is shattered because he is about law and order, right? Mm-hmm. It's the whole thing with him
remember,
being a cop back on Morlana.
Yeah.
And like
his, remember from Star Wars Rebels, Agent Kallus.
I was hoping we might see Kallus in this. Kallus has been one of my favorites.
I feel like I didn't quite... It was unclear to me where the turn was in that character, and that, you know, that is a very different show. And he seemed to go real fast from, like, elite Imperial operative to, like, rebellion operative.
He goes back and realizes he has no friends, and no one's attacking him. That's basically what happens.
If only he had friends. And, you know, like...
Zeb
treats him honorably once, and he's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't commit genocide.
Like. I mean, that's literally...
But
I think I think that's an interesting possibility for Cyril.
I would be cool. Or the
he's easily tricked, right?
He is so easily tricked.
He does seem like he's cruising to die pointlessly.
He might at some point. I think there's. I don't know if he will so much turn like. Oh, by the way, yeah, he was in the background at the Battle of Yavin. But
No.
More than I think it was that he might stand up at one point and get shot by Dendra.
Essentially, I think he will have at some point, he will have to make a choice and realize that maybe he's been on the wrong side. I think it may be the last thing he ever does.
I mean, but especially because what the Imperials are doing on Gorman is not just cracking down on, you know, scofflaws and people who are like evading taxes and smuggling and stuff. It's they want to destroy a prosperous people.
That's
incompatible with law and order.
I think he's generally actually like the people as men. It's just he knows the rebels, but it's kind of like it's cute and fun and no one's getting hurt right now, right? And so he can play spy until people get hurt. But I think Dan, you might be very well right, because if I again take a step back of the if this really isn't the Cassian Andor show, but it's really a story of like, hey, rebellion comes in many, many different flavors and characters. Here's all the different paths you can take to joining rebellion.
Yeah.
I am also wondering, just because I feel like there were a couple of things where like everyone was calling Cyril a fascist and Tony Gola is like, why do you think he's a fascist? And we're like, well, because of the fascism. But it's like, maybe he has long-term plans for that character that are added somewhere.
And that he... Yeah, I don't want to say it's like a redemption so much, but like I think he will have the opportunity to make a choice to do the right thing. And that's not a thing that will necessarily clear out all the other things he has done.
Yeah.
But he is, it's interesting to see him and Dedra contrasted for what how they believe in things, because there is a difference in I believe in the Empire. And we talked a little bit about that with Dedra's like, I was raised in Imperial childcare or whatever, right? Like, and that. He is somebody who's not necessarily like, I'm in for the Empire. It's like, no, I'm in for, I want
law
order. I want everything to be, also, the systems work correctly and everything.
How dirty has he had to get too, right? I mean, because he's really into the kind of like, I mean, he has his uniform tailored.
Yeah.
And, you know, he used to work for like, not the Imperials, but like the corporate
cops.
Rent-a-cops,
and
right?
And it all goes bad.
He's the mall cop that got way out of his skis, right? But like, have we... He takes a unauthorized field trip to Ferrix, but we haven't seen him like shoot somebody or
He's always been on the straight and narrow. I think one that the speech he gives for fuel purity, right, the staying up all night and like tracking down the details, and then two,
so whiz with spreadsheets,
really like the guy. No, and the line at the very beginning, I think the first episode of the first season of the comment the his superior officer said of like, you stayed up all night to give a report. He's like, well, two people were shot. It was the right thing to do. So I do think you guys are both onto that.
Even his thing where he like has a tantrum in front of his employees is an act to get recruited.
Yes.
And he's not mad at them, but he is having a tantrum, right?
Yes.
But he's having a tantrum at the Imperials to, it's like a stage play.
But it's funny because I think he and Dedra are just slightly at like cross purposes.
Yes.
And that is what is delicious about that whole relationship is... And he doesn't know that, but she does.
No. Yeah, she's using him. She's 100% using him.
She is using him, but also she kind of likes him. It's weird. I don't quite get it.
Does she? I don't. Is she just lonely? I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean, that character is fascinating.
We don't have a lot of insight into their their dynamic.
I will say, I've seen a few interviews with them, and the two of them in interviews, they just seem like they're right. They seem like they're really fun, great people.
Denise Goff is pretty great. And I like that she specifically also, it gives such a different vibe because she's Irish, but she's doing an English accent, right? And so that character, immediately changes the perception of that character as opposed to when you see her in the interviews.
Yes.
And she's just doing her Irish. She has a great bit somewhere on one of the interviews we watched where she talks about how she's like, yes, my face is always naturally frowny when I'm just standing there and I look at myself on screen and be like, oh, come on, Denise, you know, buck up a little bit. All right, let's talk about the last plot line, which is Dakar.
I know.
Tony, you want to take the lead on?
Sure. Somehow Wilmon has, remember Wilmon? He was on the Space Nebraska, but now he has been basically like lent out from some other resistance group to
Luthen.
They said Luthen at one point, but yeah. I thought he was Imperial.
He has been sent to deliver some equipment and provide training on it to Saw's group, and little does he know that that's kind of maybe a one-way ticket. They don't super tell us what's going on, but you can kind of infer that it's they want to steal space oil, right? And they need some special equipment to do it, and it's real dangerous, and there's complications with using equipment, and he is assigned to train some other guy and cannot leave until he has done it. And it really reinforces the, like, you know, Saw Gerrera's group is like sleeping in caves, like these are the like freedom fighters, like they have not slept on a bed or shopped in a Target in a decade or so, right? These are the real deal. And so, like, the first episode is basically he shows up and it's like, surprise, you can't leave until you train this other guy and all this stuff. Next episode, he's training them and it's real tense. And, you know, Saw basically is talking to, like, we're going to shoot this guy as soon as it's done. And then there's a scene where he walks over to the two of them and you think he's going to shoot Wilmon. And surprise, he shoots the other guy because the other guy, if you believe Saw, is a Imperial spy.
That's my favorite bit about it is, like, you know what? I'm not even sure the show knows if that guy is a spy. Well, and I actually kind of love that we don't.
Also, I mean, at the very least, his proof is a thing he pulls off a dead body after he shot the guy. So he shot the guy without 100% knowing it. You know, honestly, Luthen's management style starting to look pretty good compared to Saw.
Yeah, the closest you get is that guy asks earlier, like, you know, it'd be great if I just knew where we're going.
He ferrets out some,
so
he asks too many questions.
Maybe he just asks too many questions.
Yeah, which is to say, one question is too many.
So you're working for Saw Gerrera. One question is too many.
And so, congratulations, Wilmon. You are now part of Saw Gerrera's group, basically. Maybe not even basically. It seems like there's no way out. Next episode, they're on some planet in the middle of nowhere, and he's doing the thing. It's basically like he's cracking a safe that could explode while Saw is giving like an incredibly stressful dramatic speech in the background.
Like, let me concentrate.
Now is not the time. Read
now
the
is not the time.
Read the moon.
You know, Forrest Whitaker is Forrest Whitakering it up all over the place here. And so Wilmon succeeds, but then Saw basically has him off space gasoline as some kind of
rite of passage.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Forrest Whitaker is like the guy at the end of Apocalypse Now. Things are not not great with Saw Gerrera here.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, he is all in on everything, and I feel like this is basically. There's many types of resistance.
Yep,
you've got your town hall meeting on Gorman, and you've got guy giving, you know, speeches and making you huff gasoline to get you into initiate into his cell. But also, I mean, further, like, Saw is on a bad path and is going to be physically deteriorating between here and when we see him in Rogue One.
Yeah.
And now we know why.
And too much gas.
And also, I mean, so he's literally, by the time we see him in Rogue One, he has some kind of, like,
breathing
pseudo Darth Vader respirator apparatus. Also, robot legs. So, like, yeah, things aren't going great for him. But also, you see, like, how extreme he is and why the rest of the rebellion is not, you know, he may get results, but at what cost?
Yeah, and why nobody else trusts him.
Well, yeah, no, why nobody wants to work with him, because he will shoot people like every day to raise morale.
Will and by then, when he gives like a roar, right? Like he's bought in. Like Willman is drinking that Kool-Aid.
Well, he's huffing it.
He's huffing it. Yeah, he's freebasing that Kool-Aid. Yeah,
Nice callback there too. To Saw talks about his sister, and he talks about his like upbringing on Onderon. I mean, he doesn't mention by name. But
reminder
like,
for folks who haven't thought about it in a while, because it's from Clone Wars. If you believe it, not just Rebels, Clone Wars. This is a guy who was trained by Ahsoka and Anakin Skywalker. That's a pedigree. But also needs a therapist.
Yeah. You know what? The Saw Gerrera character, I think, is one of the most interesting, like, just trajectories of watching him throughout all these different properties he's appeared in over the years.
Yeah.
Because you also get, like, we've gotten his life, like, super memento style, where it's, like, totally out of order.
I think there is a scene now in Rebels that doesn't quite work, because he crosses paths with the Rebels group on Geonosis.
Yes.
And I don't think it lines up anymore.
I think technically does work, but, like, it's real
close. Okay, I feel like it doesn't line up. Well, just his appearance and demeanor feel maybe not at line with where we've seen him. Mm. In now that we've seen him in season one of and now
he has
multiple
good
times
days. He has
in season
bad days.
Two, yeah, I don't know. He looks a lot worse in basically. I think the Rebels episode showed him a little too close to his Clone Wars appearance because it. I mean, was that Rebels episode created before Rogue One? I don't remember.
Probably
now.
Around the same time.
Yeah, let me just wait. There's lots of things in Star Wars that don't make any sense. Don't worry a bit too much about that one.
For example, Al Guinness is very aged compared to
Ewan McGregor.
Jedi don't believe it's in skincare. Yeah. Also, why does Owen Lars dress like a Jedi?
It's just real comfy. That year.
That's a really dangerous fashion statement.
Maybe just like all the Jedi originally from Tatooine.
All of them? It makes sense, considering how often they go back there.
I like Woman's arc, considering he was the one who threw... If anyone who was going to join Saw's group makes sense, because he was the one who threw the bomb at the funeral, right?
Yeah. Well, because
they tortured
and killed his father.
Yeah.
Yep. Again, I mean, he's... Cycle. And he's young, and, you know, if anyone's going to get sucked into Saw Gerrera's...
It's going to be interesting to watch that collide again if he does cross paths with Cassian and Bix again, because obviously they've all gone very different ways.
Hey, they blew up a doctor's office today.
One doctor.
I'm just saying, let he who was without sin cast the first explosion.
Bomb.
All right.
Anything else to say before we got some quick mail?
No.
Quick mail.
Good. In my mind, I was like, I don't know if I like these three episodes quite as much as the first three. But then I was like, but I really like this, and I really like this. And I was like, okay, you know what? I continue to love the show. A+.
All right, some mail from us. A reminder, we are @ACP@Zeppelin.flights on Mastodon. We're @ACP.TheEncomparable.com on Blue Sky, and we are ACP@TheEncomparable.com for email. Let's see here. John writes, I really enjoy your recaps, and I was looking forward to this almost as much as seeing Cyril's mother again. Lyle writes,
the mother is terrible, says the Garmin Resistance.
That is a great bit. Yeah. The mother is terrifying, I think is actually what
I thought it was that she's terrible.
I think it's terrifying.
Okay. So good. That's better.
Lyle wrote, Sigrona.
Sigrona Tima!
Sadly, no Squigs this season unless I miss them. Grateful to have you back for those few magical weeks. And second on the Kurosawa watch idea. And as I told Lyle, there are Squigs in blink and you'll miss it, but in the last set of episodes at the wedding, when they're carrying champagne flutes around, in one scene you can see the Squigs. Rick writes, thank you for the shout out in the last episode. I love the first three episodes, and I'm going to watch the next three tonight. I love the spirited banter and tangents in your last podcast. You three are professional tangent ears and even get orthogonal to the topic.
TANGETEERS. Doesn't quite work.
I noticed something in the first three episodes. He, I believe, me and Cassian, seems much more professional, efficient, even brutal, like he's becoming a professional spy that you see in Rogue One. Have you three observed that? Looking forward to the show. Yeah, we talked about that a bit. I think that's
totally true.
Yeah.
Like, we need to see that trajectory from him where he was last season, where he's just kind of all, like, id. Like, he's just going and doing, reacting, and now he's actually thinking and planning.
Yeah, I think we talked, too, like, you said that for Valance Institute, that they're all so much more competent than they were in on the sheep planet.
The sheep planet. Aldani, yes.
Aldani, yeah. Scotland.
Peter writes, I'm catching up on the first three episodes, but I have to say the opening scenes with Cassian and the TIE Avenger had me literally LOL. Everyone in the Star Wars universe can seemingly jump into any ship and know how to fly it. This sequence is closer to what I imagine would actually happen most of the time. That's another great example of, like, Tony, you were talking about the punctuated humor moments. Yeah. I also laughed out loud at the scene where he immediately backs into a wall. I drove a friend's BMW once because he was in the ER and I had to pick up his car for him because I can drive a stick shift. I came very close to backing it into a pillar because it was a lot more than I thought it was.
As a management consultant, used to fly to a new town every week and have to rent a car. Like, this is actually a superpower. Dan will not believe me here. I actually learned how to drive. The first, 2 years, every time I got into a car, something went wrong. But after that, I learned it. But yeah, no, it's definitely... cars are tricky. Why not spaceships?
Smart as Shat writes, on second watch, it struck me that the incompetent rebels who kidnap Cassian can be counted on to do the wrong thing. I bet Dedra manipulates them into sparking the trouble the Empire needs on Gorman. There'll be a pivotal scene where they're bumbling and Cassian's sharp observational skills meet.
We said that. We all said that. And then they did not appear in these three episodes.
I think they got eaten by
that
monster.
They may be done with them. Yeah, they may be done.
When they go back to Yavin 4 in 4 years.
It turns out there's plenty of space idiots on other planets, too.
He follows up with two more comments where he said, he ran out of characters. Damn, I love your discussions. I couldn't wait to hear you talk about the Karn family fondue party, and you did not disappoint. So fun. And then apparently it takes me two run-throughs to comprehend. Listen again, Kat did say the same thing. Sorry. Michael writes, loving Andor season 2, the brand tie-in department is not all right, though, trying to make a taxidermy spider a thing. I think we all agree.
So I do look forward to next time we go to Disney World and you go to, that they'll have some spiders for sale.
That. You don't want that.
I don't want that, but I'll appreciate it.
Good.
I just don't want it, especially if you can get, if it's a chocolate bar and you break it open.
Also,
candy,
yeah, because apparently there's candy in them. Not enough that you have a terrifying who has decided taxidermy, not good enough on its own. Can I bring some Easter Bunny energy into this situation?
You never had a Cadbury cream spider?
Well, see, if it was just a chocolate spider, I would hate that, but at least that would make sense to me. It's when there's candy inside, the taxidermy spider is a pinata. I don't like that.
Like plastic spiders.
It's
are they taxidermied?
I thought it was taxidermy.
Who's taxidermy a spider?
Well, they use every part of the spider.
Their planet is spiders, Kat. That's all they have.
It turns out that it's built on a foundation. Those are load-bearing spiders.
Yeah. Anyway.
Michael writes,
I have to go open my weaver.
I'm lighting some of this, Michael. Oh, so you wrote a very funny bit about the energy crisis from last week, but you wrote, hello friends at ACP, I love the first three episodes of Andor season 2. Throughout the brainstorming sessions of the Empire, I couldn't help thinking about how boring a Star Wars show would be if it were just about energy. I think the only thing worse would be a movie about trade routes and taxes.
I see what you did there.
Joking aside, I love how real the difficulties of all the characters feel. I especially love Mon Mothma in these three episodes. Something I really appreciate is the level of detail they have done in Mon Mothma's planet and culture seeming distinct. The costumes, architecture, and culture are so unique and interesting. I look forward to the next episodes and hearing you guys break it down. I think maybe it was also in one of the...
I was thinking too, Danny and I dancing. Do, 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 do.
One of the background things where they said the hike, they went someplace specific to film the hike. And it was we just went here to film this hike scene in someplace in, I don't remember if it was Italy or Spain or something like that. Okay. And then we left and it's that is a long way to go for a scene.
Where can we find out? Can we do that hike?
I mean, it's probably slightly,
totally appropriate for a 3-year-old.
That's not what I was going to say. I was trying to see if I could find the bits about this, but I've lost the link.
I have to assume the show costs a fortune more than all the stuff they, you know, just making the Mandalorian on the volume, but it looks really good.
It does look really good, honestly. You know, and there's some stuff where they do deploy a little bit of that, but it's not a lot. Here we go. The mountain range that envelops Santa Maria de Montserrat, an active Benedictine abbey in Montserrat, Spain, was
I've
utilized
there.
For the
I've
area
done that hike.
Around her estate.
I can't
there
tell.
You go.
No, I literally have been there. Did you take a gondola? I've been to that. You didn't recognize it?
Oh, you didn't do the hike. You took a gondola.
No. I've done a hike up there, too. I have been to that. It's a beautiful... That's so cool. Yeah, my mom and I went there years ago.
Well, Dan and I will go by ourselves. And
it's very, very
have
cool.
fun.
Yeah,
we're going to fight cast. The whole time.
We were up there because it was
You were there for a 3-day wedding, yes.
Yes. No, actually, we were there. We were in Spain for Easter. We were in Barcelona. We went up and they had a Virgin Mary they carved out of,
many good options.
I went to soap first.
It's the Feast of the Black Virgin.
Damn, that's all that they have in jail.
I'm gonna look this up. I recall this like 20 years ago. It's the Feast of the Black Virgin, and the Virgin Mary they carved, the wood faded and turned black, and I think they called it a miracle or something. I forget exactly what it was. But there's
I
a
call
whole
it
story here.
Oxidation.
Anyways.
Cat's tour guide story of things you vaguely remember from 20
the
Andor
cast traveled to Montserrat, Spain in March of 2023 to film the traditional Chandrilan hike sequence before relocating to Valencia for the season 2 Coruscant location shooting. Well, just hanging out in Spain.
No, it's
love
this
it.
Beautiful monastery up in the mountains.
Okay. Must be nice.
David wrote, and I guess we haven't acknowledged
it's
this.
The Black Madonna Montserrat is the patron saint of Catalonia and was widely venerated.
No one disbelieved you. We just didn't know. David wrote, congratulations on episode 100, which we didn't mention.
I forgot about that.
Until now.
Is today the 100?
This is episode 100.
Hey! That's exciting.
Sagrona.
Sagrona Tima.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear you guys back on arc one of Andor. It seemed to me the theme of this first arc was showing all the ways things go wrong when there's too much compartmentalization. Is that really a word? Siri thought so. The Lost Boys on Yavin couldn't work with Andor or each other. Andor couldn't reassure BMO and the Ferrix refugees. Luthen was invited to the wedding, and Mothma and Sartha, and I think that's Clea, didn't even know. Star Wars Rebels showed some of the lack of this coordination, but it's fascinating to see it from the perspective of the outside rather than just one cell. Congratulations on your first 100 episodes. I'm eagerly looking forward to the next Century Club, if they're as good as this, or Skeleton Crew. Acolyte, not so much. Speaking of which, maybe you could rank or draft all the Star Wars seasons you've covered during the next drought. That was food science.
Nerds
food
love,
science, Dave.
Love drafting and ranking things.
Dibs on Vespas.
I don't think how the system works,
no,
but sure.
But that's shorthand for dibs on Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, well, that's a choice. Let's see how that works out for you.
We have an email from Chris. It's very long.
Dan doesn't read these.
I'm not
going
to read all of them. I did read it. I was trying to figure out how to summarize a little bit. He writes, dear Kat, dear Dan, hello nerd. I mean, dear Tony. Chris from Luxembourg here again, fresh off watching the anti-penultimate drop of Andor episodes.
I see what he's doing there.
So he mentions basically...
Wait, is it actually the anti-penultimate?
No, it's the anti-anti...
It is the anti-penultimate.
It's annoying when you say anti-penultimate when there's only four things total because it's just the
last
second.
Week was the pre-anti-penultimate.
Get out.
So, and then it was the... pre-anti-penultimate eve.
This is a very long email. I'm not going to get through all this. So
that's your problem, Dan.
Yeah. He mentions, are we going to get a version of what we saw with Erskine in Rebels, where we see the Rebels team with Mon Mothma on this side instead, like the coming together of the fleet, that Andor is macing. Yeah. So far, Andor seems to be respectful of Rebels as canon, though the overlap with Rogue One may account for some of that down to Saw Gerrera's outfit, which apart from his haircut is delightfully consistent across live action, animation, video games, and comics. He points out the making of featurette. They talk about the costumes a lot, especially Mon Mothma's wardrobe.
I should watch that.
Yeah, whether we'll see the sort of evolution into her.
We could all go as Mon Mothma for the next Halloween. We could go as different iterations of her.
That is true that she goes to the white for lack of a better term, muumuu, versus like all the fashion. That's interesting. I never really thought about that.
Though, yeah, her outfit by the time that she is. I mean, it's still very impractical for hanging out in Jungle Base.
Yeah.
But it is very subdued compared to her other outfits.
He also sent a screenshot of Clea getting a squig put into a drink at the wedding.
Nice.
Thank you.
So there's a photographic proof that it happened. Talking about narrowing down the path of where everybody leaves, because we're going to see all, like, killing off these characters. Like, when Cassian boarded the TIE Venture and there were two passenger seats in the background, and soon after we cut to the three friends waiting for my space Nebraska, I started to do the math and really worry about Brasso.
They left that droid behind, too. They're never going back to him.
I know. He's gone. He's,
you know, I mean, he's on Space Nebraska. He's in a better place.
But he was there's like,
we sent him to a far planet upstate. He's got so much room to run around and stay charged and play with that kid and not be hassled by imps. It's a better place for him.
They choose about some of the economical, like he's talking about the economical aspects, like the B2 being like foisted off is very fast, and then we spent like a full 30 seconds on Dr. Gorst walking to work with a pastry. So like, but he's like, it's very effective. Just, you know, it's interesting to sort of flesh out, decide where you're going to focus with your attention, essentially.
But Gorse, we didn't talk about it. At one point, I thought Gorse was like, oh, it must be another nightmare. And it's,
I thought that too.
And even
like he was about to walk into her apartment or something.
Yes, or something. And then even when Bix shows up, it's like, this must be a nightmare.
Is this real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it goes great.
And then there's the little moments that truly make me love these characters. Luthen complaining about his face hurting from smiling, and Clea not bringing up the deep cuts she's inflicted to her hand, and then both laughing about killing Krennic. So good. I'll be sad to continue seeing most of them lay down their lives as this goes on. Anyone taking bets on the ones we aren't fairly sure about? Run down the list for me. What are your survival odds for Vel, Clea, Lonnie, Wilman, the Fondor, Major Partagaz, Dedra, and Cyril?
Who's the Fondor?
So bad for
the Fondor is Luthen's ship.
I'm putting all my money on Lonnie. It's a horrible payout, but
Lonnie will live?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but that's where I'm putting all my points.
I think Partagaz is going to live. I don't think he's going to die.
Yeah, he's a survivor.
I think Clay is going to live, too.
She's kind of a survivor.
That's a tricky one. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I get that.
No, I don't think Vel's going to live.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I guess not. But
I think, I think everyone who ends up in the rebellion loses the people around them, right? Yeah.
Right. So, and Mon Mothma, she's Mon Mothma's cousin, Mon Mothma's which has doomed her to die.
Yeah.
No, I mean, seriously, I think Mon Mothma loses Perrin, and she loses her cousin, and I think her daughter's okay, but her daughter never wants to talk to her again.
Yeah. I actually don't know about that's something we talked about last episode of, like, if Perrin and Lita stay behind, they'll be used against her. I think they have to flee or completely disavow Mon Mothma.
I think they're going to disown her.
Yeah.
But I think before you end up at the Battle of Yavin, you're by yourself, with the exception of our friends from Star Wars Rebels, who are a beautiful space family. Mention the two. One is dead and one is unaccounted for. Yeah, Ezra, Space Whales, was the whole thing. They made a follow-up show that you forgot.
I'm not familiar with their work.
We just didn't talk about it at all. He just shows up. We
found
it
like 20 years later. That's literally 20 years later. Yeah. 2015? I don't know. It's a while.
They don't talk about it.
Yeah.
No, they do not.
It's mainly, you know, Hera and Chopper.
Guys, I'm just going to say here, if I get disappeared by space whales, just remember me fondly. Don't look for me. Just
probably having a great time with those space whales.
Yeah, have some fond memories, but don't dwell. I'll be okay. I'll come back when I'm ready.
Chris signs off his PS, 42-year-old male with shoe size 14. I don't remember why the shoe size was important. I had until recently never heard about moonlighting. Which apparently ran over here dubbed as, quote, the supermodel and the snoop, unquote, from 1990 to
1991. Wow.
Loved Sanderson's Stormlight archive, though. Wishing Dan good luck on Jeopardy. So you really covered all your bases there, Chris. Thank you.
He never needs to write us another email. Good job. Very,
very long email.
Yeah.
Thank you for writing it. I'm sorry I didn't read it all on air, but
congratulations,
Chris, you know
on being
did.
Born. Sorry to hear about your death. Take care.
All right, two series of three left.
Also, we're probably going to have to talk about Star Wars Tales from the Underworld at some point. Oh, well.
Yeah, I think I discussed this in what we're going to do. And this will...
You're going to talk about it live on a podcast?
I am going to talk about it live on a podcast. All right. We're going to record an episode about this at some point in the next few days.
Can I make a counterpoint? Oh. No, you first, and then I'll make a counterpoint.
Oh my! The daggers that were staring at you.
What is the problem?
You have to give the offer first, and then I'll give the counter offer. No,
I don't understand. Not
what is the thing? What is the problem?
You go first, dear.
So, are you?
I just want to make this more tense.
Are you revving the bus to like throw
guys,
me
it's
under?
So late.
No,
it's
no,
so,
no.
It's so late.
I'm trying to get out.
I thought we were done.
I was just going to mention this and then wrap up, but apparently there's another shoe to drop.
No.
Size 14.
Dan, you know, the word sabotage comes from the word sabo, which means a shoe.
Yes,
so,
thank you, Valeris.
Yeah. So.
My plan, which may be overridden or undermined.
Well, your plan is like an imperial plan, and there may be a resistance that undermines it.
We're going to record an episode about Star Wars Tales of the Underworld.
Or else. Keep going.
Or else we die?
Or else we're not. We will release the bootleg for members of the Incomparable. Basically, whenever we record it, which should be in the near future. The rest of you fine people will also get it,
well,
but you'll get the edited version
in
a few weeks, probably after Andor has finished airing. So if you need to hear that immediately, you should sign up to become a member of the Incomparable because then you get the bootleg. Kat, did you have something to add?
Yes, I did, Dan. Thank you so much for asking. I was also going to posit out there that I think that's a perfectly good plan. I think we should do that. But... Tony, I'll also let you know that our...
Do I have a special opportunity to buy into something? Am I being
sold a
car?
So our three-year-old son occasionally comes into Dan's office and sees the giant Empire Strikes Back poster, is very curious about it, and now wants to watch Star Wars all the time. So we've started watching Star Wars Young Jedi Tales.
Oh.
We could also do a podcast about those.
Oh, but then I'd have to watch it.
You wanted to watch them with us.
I think you just replaced, me with your child, and that's when this podcast really takes off.
It's funny sometimes when he's home and I have to do a podcast, and I said I'm going to do a podcast, and he goes, "No, I have to do a podcast."
Wow, he's gaslighting you.
No, it's my podcast.
Wow.
The last thing I'll say is I was putting him to bed like a week ago. It was actually during Dan's birthday, and I was reading him a story, I sang him a song, and then I'm about to sing a second song. He goes, no, in bed. He's like, I have to do my podcast. And he rolls over and faces the wall and just starts talking to himself for like 10 seconds and then rolls back over and says, I done.
Okay.
He's very efficient.
So yeah, we can invite him on the podcast. Yeah.
Anyway, we've reached the end of this week's episode. As far as I know. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Thank you especially to our members at The Incomparable. We really appreciate it. We appreciate all your support of the show. I know these episodes are a little longer, but that's because they keep dropping 3 episodes. It's not our fault. But hopefully you're getting something out of
this. Yeah, this is only 30 minutes per Star Wars show. Like, this is a good deal.
For you, such a deal. All right. I would like to thank my co-host, Tony Sindelar. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Kat Benish. Often a pleasure.
Cake.
Sigrona. All right. We'll be back next week to discuss the next 3 episodes of Andor because they will not stop doing this to us. Thank you once again. We'll see you then. Until then, may the Force be with you.
Can you just sound like a little happier?
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.